The next skill group that we're going to talk about is the third one, which is about transparency. And there are three headings under transparency, which are humanness, peerness, and courage. So transparency is, in this coaching model that we operate and train, that we allow our humanity and our humanness to be present with our clients. So we do not attempt to place ourselves behind a professional facade which strains out, if you like, the natural human qualities that we have and that we are. It does not seek either to strain out emotional content, compassion, emotional response, and so on. It's an important part of our role as coaches to be able to be very natural and humanistic with our clients, in the sense that they can have, in the first instance, a very natural human connection with us, as opposed to a intellectual, perhaps clinical and professional connection with us. I'm not proposing here a confusion of the boundaries. You are definitely their coach, and they are definitely the client, and the relationship you have with them is configured to be in service of them, insofar as you can be in service of them, and the relationship can be in service of them. It is, of course, the case that you do this work because it matters to you, that it cares, that it's important that you care about people going through these things, that you have that compassion. So it's important that that is made clear as well and integrated into the relationship. What transparency and humanness should not be is a permission for the coach to allow their experience and their response to our clients, their humanness, to spill over in an uncontained way into the relationship. So there can be what you might call a deliberate over identification that sometimes people will use as a technique to try to get their clients to feel comfortable with them. A kind of overemphasis on telling them all the time that they understand, that they hear them, these kinds of approaches. And it's a skill set that needs to be developed over time, but it's allowing yourself to express that you are with them, that you too have this understanding of this humanness, but not allow it to cascade into the relationship. The place where this is most likely to occur is through this other aspect of transparency, with this, which is peerness. I want to talk about peerness now in two contexts. One is peerness, the idea that you as a coach may be a peer to somebody through your common shared experience of a healthcare challenge or a life experience. So I too had that experience, or I too had a problem with that, or I too experienced that illness, and so on. Peerness also extends into identifying through other life experiences. I too was from a broken home, or my parents were divorced, or I too was ill as a child, or I too was a refugee, or I too I'm a first generation immigrant, and so on. And pretty much anything can be described as part of this idea of peerness. What we could then do is say, well, peerness doesn't have to be attached and to a specific life experience, but can actually also be attached and focused around being a human being. So the important connection, what makes us peers, is that we both suffer anxiety from time to time, or we both get angry, or we both understand what despair feels like, that we have had incidents in our life where we have felt a lot of grief, and so on. So this idea of peerness through human connection, as opposed to peerness through life events. My point of view about why people gravitate towards other people who have had similar life events is because they feel that they may be better understood by somebody who has also had that experience. When we delve and dig into what this understanding means, it usually ends up being about emotions. So people will say they understand me because they know what it feels like to be somebody who has this problem. They know what it feels like to come from a broken home. They know what it feels like to have had a problem with addiction. They know what it feels like to have been severely overweight and felt like not going outside. They know what it feels like to feel to be so stressed that you can't function. You always hear usually this language of feeling. So if we look at that and pull it apart a bit, we see that the underlying reason for the being drawn towards shared experience is actually emotional, in the sense that I feel that they understand me and that I feel that they have known what the emotional experience is like. Now, there's two aspects to PNS which are important in the early stages of recovery. So sometimes a client might seek to find out, has the coach ever had a similar thing happen to them in their life? Does the coach know what the client is talking about? Now, if you have a client who's come to talk to you about, for instance, let's say a problem they've got with being dependent on prescription drugs, let's use that as an example. If you've never had a problem with that, then you can't truthfully say I understand what it's like to have that kind of dilemma. What you can do is navigate the conversation or ask your client to what it feels like to be in that have this experience. What are they feeling about this dependency? And if you hear an emotional response coming back and saying, I'm very scared that I can't do anything about it, or it's making me feel this, or it's making me feel that, then we're on to a different kind of identification, because we're now on an emotional identification. And of course, you as a coach, being a human being, I hope, will be able to identify with them emotionally. So you too can say, well, I do understand that I have experience of being very scared. There have been times in my life where I've been very scared or felt despair. So when you say you feel despair, I understand. So it's shifting the peerness onto a human aspect, which is more important than getting hung up on the actual specifics of the experience that an individual client might have gone through. A lot of people make a mistake in thinking that the best person to help them is somebody who has gone through the same experience as them. That can be the case, that you can get great support and comfort from somebody who identifies with you. But good coaching skills and good coaches are good coaches, and they can work with anybody who is having an experience that they're looking to do something about. So it's not a prerequisite at all for us that you have to have had the healthcare challenge or the life experience challenge in order to work with people that are having it themselves. What we would say is that in some cases, in fact, the fact that you are not a peer can actually be an asset to the coaching relationship, because you will be able to have less investment in your own self-management, and so you will be able to more easily get over there with the client and be in the client's world. So it's a complicated set of things to navigate your way through. In this early stage of recovery, it's just important that coaches do not make the mistake of having a knee-jerk reaction around this idea of peerness. The third topic on this list is courage. transparency and courage. Courage is important because you may need, first of all, to draw on courage in order to be able to put yourself in your responses into the coaching relationship in a way. It can take quite a lot of courage for the coach to actually not retreat, if you like, behind a professional facade and a professional wall. And also, it can be important that you are transparent in a courageous way with your client in service of your client. So when you have a particularly powerful reaction to something that is occurring in the coaching space, it can often be tempting to not bring that forward. So if you like to let it pass by. And courage is needed sometimes to articulate to your client the response that you're having to a specific circumstance in the coaching. To be specific, this normally arises around issues in a client's life in the early recovery stage, which are really very critical. Sometimes clients will have been given quite severe diagnosis around their health condition. So it could be really important that certain things take place, or your client finds a way to bring into place in their life certain things quite quickly. And sometimes your clients will be resistant, and sometimes, as we're going to talk about later on in this module in another section, your client will be quite defended. They will have a lot of defenses around some of these things, making some of these changes, precisely because they have some resistance to feeling some of the emotions that go with them. So they will become resistant, and it will appear to the coach, or you will be able to see quite clearly, that they are not closing the gap that is critical that perhaps they make efforts to closing. They may well have told you that. They may well have come in and said, you know, I've been told that if I don't do X, Y, and Z, you know, I run a serious risk of this happening or that happening. And they will know it. So they will have the knowledge. But they haven't yet figured out how to turn that knowledge, activate that knowledge into actual movement. And sometimes what you're going to need to do as a coach is be courageous in stepping in energetically and transparently to activate with them some kind of closing of that gap. And that can mean taking a risk. It can mean truth speaking in a certain kind of way to your client that is driven by your compassion and concern for them, that sometimes can be, you know, challenging and powerful. This kind of courage is usually best deployed and hopefully only is required once you've developed a strong, robust container through the design process with your client. Otherwise, it can cause the coaching relationship to, if you like, burst its seams, and the client's response can be to eject themselves out of the coaching relationship. So something that comes with experience, but important, again, to recognize as part of the landscape of this early recovery stage, where some of the risks and jeopardies may be quite high for your client.